We'll turn again to Luke's Gospel, chapter 2. We spent the last few months talking from this chapter about the birth of the Lord Jesus. And the things that happened after he was born. A few weeks after Jesus was born, Mary, his mother, along with Joseph, her husband, took him to Jerusalem and brought him into the temple. It was there that they first met Simeon and then Anna. That's what we've been talking about in the last few weeks. And on our way through that story, we pointed out something which Luke obviously wants us to notice. He emphasizes it very strongly. Look back to verse 22. Luke chapter 2, verse 22. When the time of their purification, according to the law of Moses, had been completed, Joseph and Mary took him to Jerusalem to present him to the Lord, as it is written in the law of the Lord, every firstborn male is to be consecrated to the Lord, and to offer a sacrifice in keeping with what is said in the law of the Lord, a pair of doves or two young pigeons. You see, three times in those verses, Luke emphasizes that everything was done just as the law of the Lord said it should be done. There were all these ceremonies that the law of Moses said that you had to go through when a child was born. Well, Joseph and Mary and Jesus went through them all according to the law of the Lord. Everything was done according to the law that God had given. And then it said, further down again in verse 27, the parents brought in the child Jesus to do for him what the custom of the law required. Why does Luke make such a point of this? And the answer we gave was this. The law Luke is talking about is the law that God gave through Moses to the nation of Israel. When God made his covenant with Israel, he gave them a whole body of legislation. And he said, this law is part of the covenant between us. If Israel is going to be my nation, then Israel must keep this law. And so Luke is telling us that Jesus did keep that law from the time he was born. Luke is telling us that Jesus was a true Israelite. He was born as an Israelite. He was at the heart of Israel. He was the child of an Israelite family, a family within the covenant. It's one of the big themes of Luke's gospel, that Jesus really was an Israelite. He came to Israel because he was the Messiah of Israel. And the sign of that was that all the requirements of the law were followed for Jesus from the time he was a baby. And you'll see that that's stressed again in the verse we've reached this morning, verse 39. When Joseph and Mary had done everything required by the law of the Lord, they returned to Galilee, to their own town of Nazareth. Luke says the family didn't go home to Nazareth until they had done everything that the law of the Lord required. Notice how much Luke leaves out in this verse. Remember, between that first visit to Jerusalem, when they met Simeon and Anna, and the time when they went back to Nazareth, remember there was a gap of years, and it included a trip down to Egypt, getting away from Herod. And Luke doesn't mention that at all. For him, the only important thing to say at this point is that in the case of Jesus, the law of the Lord, the law of Israel, was followed to the letter. Mary and Joseph knew that they mustn't take Jesus home to Nazareth until they had gone through all the ceremonies that the law required. Now, I'm not going to dwell any further on that point this morning. I've just mentioned it because we did reach that verse, and because it's a hint of the whole big storyline of Luke's gospel. But I want us to move on. I want us to move on to verse 40. This is what Luke says in verse 40. And the child grew and became strong. He was filled with wisdom, and the grace of God was upon him. Now here in a sentence, you've got Luke's description of Jesus' childhood. And this really is all we know about Jesus as a young child. We've had the stories of Jesus' birth and the things that happened straight afterwards. We know that his parents eventually took him back to Nazareth. And then you get this one verse which covers the first 12 years of his life, the first stage of his growing up, his childhood. That was the way that Jewish people looked at things. A boy was still a child for the first 12 years of his life. And then at 13 he had his bar mitzvah, which marked the fact that he was now counted as a man. And from that point on, he had to start taking on the duties of adult life. And of course, that was progressive. You have your 12 years of childhood, then bar mitzvah at 13, then you become a man, and then you start maturing as a man, taking on more and more adult responsibility through your teens and your 20s. And then finally, at the age of 30, you're regarded as a fully mature member of society. From then on, you're able to take on a full role in the life of the community. So Luke tells us about Jesus' childhood here in verse 40. And then he tells us about an episode that happened right at the end of Jesus' childhood, when he was 12 years old. That's verses 41 to 50. And that story shows us where Jesus had got to by the end of his childhood. And then we have verses 51 and 52, just a couple of verses again, to sum up the rest of Jesus' growing up, from the age of 12 through his maturing years. And then finally in chapter 3 and verse 23, you have Jesus as a fully mature man around the age of 30, beginning his life's ministry. So I want us to look at Luke's summary of Jesus' childhood in chapter 2, verse 40. The child, the word means the kiddie, the young child. The child grew and became strong. He was filled with wisdom, and the grace of God was upon him. Now, there are three things said about the Lord Jesus here. Firstly, we're told that he grew in strength. He grew and became strong. Mary and Joseph watched this child reach his first birthday, his second birthday, his third birthday, his fourth birthday, and they saw him grow in strength. They watched him as he learnt to crawl, and then to stand, and then to walk. They watched him become a toddler, and then a child. They watched him change and grow, and he grew strong. He developed physically, just like any other healthy lad. And there was that growth in physical strength. But I don't think Luke is talking here just about physical strength. When he says that Jesus became strong, he's talking about strength of every sort. Jesus had to grow in intellectual strength, a mental ability. He had to learn to read and write and do arithmetic. And he got better and better at those things. He had to grow in practical strength, in the ability to do things. He'll have worked alongside Joseph in the carpenter shop, and there he'll have learned how to handle a saw and a chisel and a hammer. And he got better and better at those things. He grew in the capacity to do things. And he grew in something else as well. I can't quite find a word for it. I could call it emotional strength, but it's more than that. Perhaps I'll just have to call it personal strength. You know, you take a five-year-old child, and, well, she simply can't cope with some things, can she? She's very fragile. So you take her to school for the first time, and you leave her at school. And when she sees you walking away, she bursts into tears. She can't handle it. Doesn't understand why you should leave her. The prospect of, well, you've tried to explain to her, the prospect of being without mum all day. She just can't bear it, so she cries all morning. Now, you're not surprised when that happens with a five-year-old, are you? But you'd be worried if it happened with a 10-year-old. You expect a 10-year-old to have grown emotionally stronger than that. You know, a 6-year-old boy may break his heart when one of his toys gets broken. And it seems like the end of the world for him. But if a 14-year-old lad still cried when one of his possessions was broken, well, you'd say there's something wrong there. He's not developed properly. We say it about some children, don't we? Oh, he's very young for his age. And we don't mean by that the child is physically underdeveloped, nor do we mean that he's behind in his schoolwork, nor do we mean that he's not learned proper physical skills. What we're saying is that he's not got this personal, emotional strength. He's not got the capacity to cope with things. Maybe we're saying he's oversensitive. Maybe we're saying he's emotionally fragile. He's unable to see things in proportion. He's liable to overreact to things. He lacks personal strength, resilience. Well, Jesus grew in strength in all these different ways: physical strength, intellectual ability, capability to do things, and then this emotional, personal strength. Jesus grew. You could see him maturing year by year. You could see him becoming a capable, strong, sturdy little lad. And then Luke tells us something else about Jesus' childhood. It says, Jesus was filled with wisdom. What is wisdom? Well, in the Bible, wisdom means knowing how to make decisions and then making right decisions. Wisdom isn't just something intellectual. It's something practical in the Bible. You know, you look at the book of Proverbs. It's all about the importance of being wise. But when you read it, it's not abstract philosophy. It's about handling money properly. It's about choosing the right friends. It's about controlling your tongue. It's about relating rightly to your superiors. It's about choosing a marriage partner. That's what wisdom is all about. It's about handling all sorts of situations. It's about making decisions. Well, Jesus was full of wisdom. He was a wise lad. Whenever there was a decision to be made, he always knew just the right thing to do. Jesus had to cope with exactly the same problems and difficulties as any other lad of his age. How do you cope with younger brothers who borrow your things and then break them? How do you cope when things go wrong at school and somebody starts bullying you or a teacher starts acting unfairly? What should you do when someone tells you that they're planning to do something and you know it's wrong, but this person says to you, now remember, it's a secret, don't tell Dad? You know, children have to face some very puzzling situations where it's very hard to know what to do. Well, Jesus faced just those sort of situations as a little boy. And he always worked out the best, the wisest way of handling any situation that arose. He never made a mistake. He never put a foot wrong. He was filled with wisdom, says Luke. He had all the wisdom for all the decisions that he had to take. There were no gaps in his wisdom, whether it was the question of how do you deal with your teachers, or how do you deal with other children in the street, or how do you spend your pocket money. He knew. He was wise in every area. He was full of wisdom. Later on, in verse 52, we're going to be told that he grew in wisdom. As you get older and as you get bigger, well, you need more and more wisdom because you're asked to handle more and more complicated situations. As a child, Jesus didn't need the wisdom that it takes to handle the household finances. As a child, he didn't need the wisdom to decide who to marry. As a child, he didn't need the wisdom to decide who to vote for in a general election, because he didn't have those responsibilities or their equivalent as a young child. As he grew older, he would gain more wisdom for those situations. But even as a child, he had all the wisdom that a small child can hold, all the wisdom that a small child could ever need. He never did anything foolish, never did anything reckless, never did anything silly. Even when he was a child of 3, when he spoke, people thought, what a wise thing for a child to say. People watched what that 4-year-old, that 7-year-old, that 10-year-old did, and they said, what a wise child he is. He always sees just what needs to be done. So that's the second thing Luke tells us. He was filled with wisdom. And then thirdly, Luke tells us that the grace of God was upon him. This child was godly. The grace, or the favour, of God was upon him. This child had a perfectly happy relationship with God. From his babyhood, this child was aware of God. This child loved God with all his heart. This child walked with God and talked with God. From the moment that this child was able to speak words, he used those words to speak to God. He lived under God's smile. He trusted God totally. He obeyed God perfectly. He enjoyed God completely. It was clear that the favor of God was upon him, that there was no shadow in his relationship with God. Other people could see it. That's why it's written down here, because that was the way people remembered him and his childhood. When you met this little boy, you were aware that this boy was close to God, that God's presence, God's favour surrounded him. You couldn't but be aware of God's grace resting on him. his parents and other people, the people who knew him best. They watched this lad grow up. They watched him from babyhood right up to the age of 12. And what did they see? They saw him grow in strength and ability. They saw that at every stage he was full of wisdom. And best of all, they saw that he lived a life of perfect godliness. A child can be holy. And they could see that Jesus was perfectly holy. So that is Luke's one verse summary of Jesus's childhood. And now Luke gives us one perfect example of what that meant in practice. We have the story in verses 41 to 51. Each year, Jesus's parents, his mother, his adoptive father, would travel up to Jerusalem for the Passover festival. This was one of the three great festivals of the year. People from all over the country would leave their homes and they'd make the journey to Jerusalem. They'd usually stay for just over a week. The whole festival lasted 8 days. It was one of the great annual holidays. People would travel up to the festival in big groups. All the folk from a village might travel together, or all the relatives from a big family would travel together. And maybe they'd all rent a house in Jerusalem and they'd share it for a week. Or maybe they'd all camp out just outside Jerusalem, or if they found space, maybe in one of the gardens, one of the parks in Jerusalem. And year after year, Joseph and Mary, that was their practice. They travelled up to Jerusalem with their family, with other relatives, to attend this festival. Well, this year, Jesus had reached the age of 12. Now, I expect his parents gave him a good deal of freedom during the week. After all, by Jewish reckoning, he was nearly a man. He was almost ready to take on the duties of adult life. He'll have been there with the family on Passover night, when the whole family had to eat the Passover meal together. He'll have been there with the family at other of the key ceremonies during the week. But I expect that for much of the week he'll have been out and about with his friends and his relatives. Speculating now, but there's his cousin John, isn't there? Almost exactly the same age as Jesus. I'd be surprised if John weren't there in Jerusalem for the Passover festival. Jesus and John must have been very, very close, mustn't they? I imagine they spent a lot of time exploring Jerusalem together. Well, the week comes to an end. And everybody packs up, and the donkeys are saddled, and there's all the usual confusion and noise of breaking camp. But eventually, by mid-morning, everybody's ready to go. And there's lots of laughter, and there's lots of waving goodbye to old friends. And then Joseph and Mary and all their crowd set off from Jerusalem. They're on the road now back to Nazareth. I mean, Jesus doesn't seem to be around anywhere. But it doesn't matter. He'll be with Uncle So-and-so, or he'll be with Cousin So-and-so. He'll be in the group somewhere, won't he? And it's only that evening, when they stop to camp for the night, that they realise that Jesus isn't with them. Somehow or other, he's been left behind in Jerusalem. Now, we don't know how this had happened, but it's the sort of thing that could happen so easily. There's some misunderstanding about the place where everybody's meeting, or the time at which they're going to leave. Somebody's passed on a message wrongly. You can imagine 1,000 different ways that this could have happened. Similar things happen today. You know, some people have read verse 43, the words there, the boy Jesus stayed behind in Jerusalem, and they've imagined that what it's saying is that Jesus deliberately stayed behind in Jerusalem without telling his parents. Well, of course, it's not saying that at all. All it's saying is that he was still there in Jerusalem when the others left. There was some breakdown in communication. Somehow he had been misled by his parents and by the group that were travelling together. Well, when Joseph and Mary realise that Jesus isn't with them, then they start to search. They search among the relatives, they search among the friends. And then they start to get panicky. They realise that Jesus is nowhere to be found. And that can only mean one thing, that he's been left behind in the big city. And so first thing the following morning, they begin the trek back, that whole day's journey again. And they begin to search for Jesus everywhere that they can think of in Jerusalem. I mean, where would he go? I mean, where would he stay? He's got no money. He doesn't really know his way round Jerusalem very well. Who might he go to in Jerusalem? What friends do we have in Jerusalem whom he might have gone to stay with? And the longer they search, the more frantic they become. And then finally, someone has a thought. Well, he's always been very interested in the temple, hasn't he? I mean, there have been lots of times in the past week when he's asked if he can go to the temple and spend time there. Is it worth looking there in the temple? I mean, all right, the festival's over, and the temple has returned now to its usual routine. Most lads wouldn't have any interest in being there in the temple, listening to the rabbis giving their lectures. But then Jesus isn't like most lads, is he? He's always been different. And so they go to the temple. They're not really expecting Jesus to be there. But they can't think of anywhere else. They've tried everywhere else. The temple's a big place. I imagine they ask people. They ask the temple guards. You've not seen a 12-year-old lad, have you? On his own. And then someone chuckles and says, "Oh, him. Yeah, he's been waiting here. He said he had got left behind by his parents, is that right? But he said that you'd know where to look for him. Well, you'll find him over there. There's a group of rabbis holding a debate over there. I'm sure I saw him over there with them listening in." And so they make their way over. And there he is, a 12-year-old lad, and he's sitting with a group of students who are listening to the teachers, the rabbis, the professors, who are discussing some points from the Old Testament scriptures. And he's joining in the discussion. He's listening to everything that's being said. He's asking questions. And instead of being brushed off, his questions are taken very seriously because they're perceptive questions. And sometimes one of the rabbis puts a question to him, and he thinks about it and then he gives his answer. That's the way the rabbis do teach. Much of their teaching is done through question and answer. And they'll ask a question to make the students think, and then they'll allow the students to probe them with questions. Well, here's this 12-year-old lad, and he's joining in this discussion. And the teachers and everybody who's present are amazed We're told that in verse 47, everyone who heard him was amazed at his understanding and his answers. And this lad knows the scriptures so well. He understands them so clearly. When he asks a question, it's so perceptive. When he answers a question, his answers are so thoughtful and profound. This boy has an understanding of God and of the scriptures and of human nature that's amazing. He's grasped things that you would never expect a child to grasp. I need to fix that picture in your mind's eye. This 12-year-old lad. It's 3 days since he's seen his parents. 3 days since he got lost. And here he is, sitting calmly in the temple, engaged in this profound discussion. People all around him, and those people are amazed as they listen to him. Let's think then about the picture of Jesus that we've got here. You remember Luke told us that Jesus grew and became strong. And you can see here how strong he has become. He's obviously grown in physical strength since he was a baby. He's capable of fending for himself physically, left there in Jerusalem. But he's grown too in that indefinable emotional personal strength that I was talking about. He's just so poised. He's so calm. I mean, how many 12-year-old lads in that situation would be so fearless, so unperturbed? He's got a balance, he's got a poise. He's not in a panic. He's not desperate. He knows that his parents will turn up in due time, and he can be quiet and wait for them. There's a tremendous emotional strength there. There's a maturity beyond his years. And you can see too how intellectually strong he's become. He's capable of following the complicated discussion of these great rabbis. As we've said, he can ask the most discerning questions, and he's capable of answering the most difficult questions. There's an intellectual strength that nobody would have expected in a 12-year-old boy. Now, we mustn't misunderstand this. We believe that Jesus was truly and fully God, sharing all the attributes of God. In his divine nature, he is omniscient, he is all-knowing. But Luke doesn't say Jesus had this intellectual skill because he was God's son and so he automatically knew everything. No, he says, Jesus grew in strength. Like any other human child, Jesus had to grow. He had to develop this intellectual ability. He wasn't born knowing his alphabet. Someone taught him to read, and he had to work at it just like any other child. He had to learn how to understand grammar and syntax. Someone had to introduce him to the Old Testament scriptures and start him in his reading of them. And then he had to study them. He had to memorize them. He had to mull over them. He had to learn how to understand the figures of speech in scripture, the poetry of the Psalms, the prophets. And if he hadn't done those things, he couldn't have held his own in this discussion. When one of these teachers there in the temple quoted a verse, Jesus had to know the verse, and he had to know the context, otherwise he couldn't have followed the discussion. You know, every rabbi was expected to know the Old Testament scriptures off by heart, plus almost everything anybody had ever said about them. Well, by the age of 12, Jesus clearly knew swathes of scripture by heart, or he couldn't possibly have made sense of the debate. Yes, I'm sure that naturally he had a brilliant mind. He had a genius level IQ. And it's a mind that's never been damaged or spoiled by sin. He can think more clearly than any other child or man, because there are no sinful biases in his thinking. No prejudices, no warping in his thinking. But that mind still had to be trained. He's had to learn, he's had to grow in ability. And you can see the results of that here in the extraordinary ability that he shows. I hope you can see the point I'm making. I wish there were more of the families of the church here this morning to hear the point. Whatever else this passage tells us, it tells us that Jesus had not wasted those 12 years of childhood. He hadn't dawdled around. He must have worked incredibly hard in intellectual things. He's from a working class home. He's a carpenter's son. He'll be expected to work in his dad's workshop. But somehow he's managed to spend long hours studying. He's concentrated. He's managed to develop this sort of intellectual prowess. It's not happened without hard, hard work. You know, I look back and I just wish I had worked harder in school. If I had worked harder as a child, if I had actually done the homework I was set, then how much more useful I might have been. The example we have here of Jesus should encourage children to take their schooling seriously, to work at things that seem difficult and boring, things that don't seem to have any real point. For a child of 4 or 5, it doesn't seem to have any point to learn your times tables. It's only later that you realize how important it is to develop your intellectual strength. From childhood, from babyhood, Jesus was developing his mind so that it became a powerful tool to be used in the service of God. I'm reminded of David Livingstone, who from the age of 10 was working in the local mill. And with a portion of his first week's wages, he purchased a Latin grammar. He's from a very poor working class home. But he says, I've got to learn. So he's got his wages. Oh, he's worked for that money. What's he going to spend it on? He goes out and he buys a Latin grammar. And then he places this on the loom. And as he passed to and fro at his work, he would catch now a word, now a sentence from its open page. That was the way he taught himself Latin. Just he wasn't allowed to stop even for 5 minutes. But on the way past, he could take a glance at the book and learn one more word. He had to be at work in the factory by 6 o'clock each morning. He didn't leave it till 8 o'clock at night. 14 hours of labour each day for a 10-year-old lad. And then when he got home, he settled at his books till midnight. That was his intellectual training, which equipped him to become perhaps the greatest pioneer missionary ever to go to Africa. In that, he was modelling himself on Christ, who by the age of 12 had already mastered the skills that were necessary to debate with the professors of the day. How important it is for parents to make sure that your children grow in intellectual strength. how much interest do you take in your children's learning, in your children's studying? I can't believe that Jesus reached this level of intellectual strength unless his parents were encouraging him from the beginning. But why do you encourage your children then in their learning? Because you think it's important that they should pass exams and get a good job? Or for this reason, because you're preparing them for God's service, and so you want them to be intellectually strong? Jesus, by the age of 12, already had huge strength. Physically, he was clearly fit. When you see his physical achievements later on in life, you know that he is somebody who's disciplined his body. Emotionally, personally, he was strong. And intellectually, you see the strength that he developed by the age of 12. And then he's full of wisdom. And you can see that here in this story as well. You can see how wise he is in this situation. He finds he's been left behind in Jerusalem. What shall I do? You can imagine the questions that are going through his mind. What am I supposed to do? Shall I rush off and try to catch up with them? Well, no, because that might only cause more problems. Suppose that we miss one another. I could be going out of one gate of the city while they're coming in through another gate. I mean, with hundreds of thousands of people all pushing their way out of the city and going home, it would be so easy, wouldn't it, for Jesus to miss them? No. He knows what the wisest thing to do is. The wisest thing to do is to stay here in Jerusalem, just to wait for them to come and find him. But where's the best place to wait? Where should I go? I mean, we've been camping out for the past week. Well, where's the safest place to go? Well, there's no doubt about that. There's one place where you don't expect to be mugged. One place where you don't expect to be kidnapped. And yes, Jesus thinks his parents would realize, won't they, that in the temple's the place where he would want to be. So Jesus says, yes, that's best. I'll stay in the temple till they find me. It's a wise thing to do. It was a safe thing to do. It was a sensible thing to do. We read in verse 48 that his parents were astonished when they saw him there in the temple, sitting among the rabbis. I wonder where they would have expected to find him. You know, where would another lad have gone if he had been lost in Jerusalem for those 3 days? What would have attracted another lad? What dangerous situation might another lad have got himself into? But no, what a demonstration this is of Jesus' wisdom. There he is, self-possessed, calm, in the safest place in the world. The most reasonable place in the world. His mother, she's been so frantic with worry, she rushes over to him, she begins to tell him off. Son, why have you treated us like this? Your father and I have been anxiously searching for you. That's what parents have been saying since the beginning of history, isn't it? Don't you realize how worried we've been? But Jesus is genuinely puzzled by that. He says, but why were you searching for me? Surely this was the obvious place. Surely you should have guessed that I would be here. And yes, they should have done. It was the obvious place. Jesus was wiser than they were. If they had thought, if they had planned ahead, they'd have known straight away where to look. And instead, they allowed themselves to get into a panic. They should have remembered that this child was not like other silly children. This was a child full of wisdom. And he was in exactly the place, doing exactly the things that a wise child should have done in that situation. A wise child wouldn't be wasting his time. And so he's not going to waste his time. He's going to keep up his education even during those 3 days. He's going to take advantage of the opportunity to carry on learning, rather than just sightseeing, rather than just visiting the market. He's going to be using his time in the wisest possible way, in the best possible place. So you can see Jesus and how he's developed in strength, and you can see how full of wisdom he is. But most of all in this passage, you can see the godliness that's resting upon him. You can see that the reason he gives, you can see the reason he gives why he went to the temple to wait. It was the wise place to be. But there was another reason why Joseph and Mary should have known he would be there. It wasn't just because it was a safe place. It wasn't just because he could pursue his education there. It was, he says it in verse 49. Didn't you know that I had to be, that I would certainly be in my Father's house? The temple was God's dwelling place. It was God's house. And Jesus knows that God is his Father. And so he feels at home in the temple. That's where he feels safe. If you're lost, then where is the most obvious place to go? Well, you head for your own Father's house if you know where it is. And that is where Jesus has gone. He wants to be in the place where God is. He's drawn to God. He's drawn to God's house. He's drawn to God's presence. He wants to be among people who are talking about God and who are studying God's word. He wants to be where God is worshipped. He loves the temple because it's his Father's house. This 12-year-old boy, he's walking through the world conscious of a unique, special relationship with God. It's amazing, isn't it? When he calls God my Father. Jewish people never thought of God in that way. God was the great, unapproachable, sovereign Lord. They didn't even dare to use his name. They'd find some other way to speak of God without ever using his name. They wouldn't say the kingdom of God, they'd say the kingdom of heaven. People thought of God as somebody utterly unapproachable, as a great far-off master, king of the universe. Even good men, believing men, never dared to talk of God as their father. If you'd asked John the Baptist, and he was the greatest figure of the Old Testament age, if you'd asked him, who is God, then John might have said, well, he's the Lord of hosts. He's the Holy One. He's the judge. He's the king. And who are you, John? Well, I'm his servant. But if you had asked 12-year-old Jesus, who is God, he'd have answered, he's my Father. And who are you? I'm his child, I'm his boy. Jesus knows he's God's son. He feels closer to God than he does to any person on earth. Makes that plain, doesn't he? Mary says to him in verse 48, your father and I have been searching for you. She means Joseph. Joseph has been Jesus' adoptive father. Joseph has loved him and cared for him. He's been everything a human father can be to him. But when Mary says, your father's been searching for you, Jesus says, no, I've been with my Father all along. I've been in my Father's house. My relationship with God is closer than my relationship with Joseph. You see, he trusts Joseph. He trusts the man who's adopted him here on earth. But there's another father whom he trusts infinitely more. He loves Joseph, no doubt. But he's closer to the God of heaven than he is to Joseph or Mary or any of his brothers or his cousins. Every moment Jesus is speaking to his Father, he's listening to his Father, he's learning from his Father, he's expecting help from his Father. All through his childhood he is aware that he is God's one and only Son. And that's why he can be so calm. That's why he can be so unworried, lost there in that strange city. He's still with his Father. He's still kept in his Father's care. What has he to fear if his Father is with him? If he's actually under the roof of his Father's house, what's he got to worry about? He's been left behind by his adoptive father for a few days. But he's in the presence of his true Father. The grace of God is upon him. The favor of God is upon him. You see it so plainly here in this passage, the lovely tenderness of the relationship between this boy and the infinite God of the universe, whom he says, "My Father." The miracle is this, that those who belong to Jesus Christ now, those who are united to Jesus Christ by faith, that they too can have this sort of relationship with the Father. And they can have it even while they're very young children. There is no reason why any of the children in this church, however young, shouldn't come to know God as Father. Shouldn't come to the same sort of happy relationship with God that Jesus himself experienced. Because a young child can come to Christ and have his sins forgiven and be born again and can become one of God's children through Jesus, and then can walk through the world conscious of God at all places, at all times. It is the responsibility of parents to train their children to be strong. Physically strong, intellectually strong, strong in terms of their abilities, emotionally strong. You want that for your children, don't you? It's the duty of parents to teach their children wisdom, to teach them how to handle the difficult situations of life, to teach them what to do if they get lost, to teach them what to say if an officious social worker starts interrogating them, to teach them how to handle relationships, how to handle friendships. It's the duty of parents to teach a child wisdom. But most of all, it's the duty of parents to teach children how they can become children of God. And to say to them, there is one who is willing to give you a greater and an eternal love than we, a greater love than we can give you, an eternal love, a love that is worth more than all other things besides. Let's teach our children the way to God through Jesus.